Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
I'm Gautam Palappa. I'm an executive advisor at VMware, and I work with various companies and help them on their business transformations.
Gautam, thank you so much for finding time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. Where are you based at?
Thank you for having me, John. I'm based out of the Bay Area. I'm currently in San Jose. It's pretty sunny and it's actually warm. So yeah, looking forward to the weekend this week.
That's excellent. Thanks so much. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about your current role. What are you doing? But before that, give us a thumbnail version of your career, your background, anything interesting that's really stood out. Happy to hear about that.
Sure. All right. So I come from a family of academics. So you can almost say that I'm the black sheep of the family because I am in the industry rather than academia. My mother was a doctor. She was a leading specialist in HIV/AIDS research back in India. And my dad, he was a professor in one of the Ivy Leagues in India as well. So I wanted to go and follow my mother's footsteps. I actually wanted to be a doctor, neurosurgery, if you can believe that. I mean, what kid would say, oh God, I want to be a neurosurgeon because I love to work on people's brains. But unfortunately, I was underage. And so I couldn't join medicine because at that time they wanted to, at least in India, they feel that you need to be mentally, physically mature by a certain amount if you have to go through the rigors of medical school. So instead of waiting 2 years, I decided I'd switch over to engineering. And so I became an electrical engineer. But the focus of helping people was always there for me. So after my bachelor's, I did my master's. It was focused on helping develop devices, especially for people suffering from epilepsy, to help suppress the mild seizures or predict them. So that was a very cool project. And then my PhD just extended into that. It was all about smart systems and smart technology for assisted healthcare. So that theme of empathy and helping people has always been there for me. I then joined the industry. I was a software analyst a long, long time ago. I made the mistake of graduating from my PhD in 2009. It's probably the worst time that one could have graduated. But did that, joined as a software analyst, grew up through the ranks, learned a lot in the telecom industry, in the service industry. Products. Quickly within a couple of years, I started leading all of engineering and operations for that global telecom organization, helped with the digital transformation of that company, made them go cloud native, multi-cloud, then did it for a couple of other places, joined Pivotal as a global CTO to help other customers who are going through a business transformation. And then recently, VMware acquired Pivotal. And so I'm now an executive advisor doing the same thing, but trying to help people go through a business transformation, which is so important right now because of the pandemic. Everything's remote and digital and contactless. And, you know, you have to fundamentally rethink and reimagine your entire business strategies and business models to survive. So, yeah, it's been an exciting, challenging, adversarial time that we've had over the last year.
Yeah, well, what a journey! Quite diverse, you know, with the PhD and also going into engineering and technology, and now in the executive advisory role at a very reputable large organization such as VMware. Tell us a little bit more about your current role, what falls under your purview, what are the different areas of responsibility. As an executive advisor is not quite as common, I guess, as some of the typical roles. So I would love to learn a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so we are a really small group of seven individuals. We've all been in C-suite or executive roles in various companies, have performed digital transformation successfully in many of these verticals. And so collectively, we have a lot of thought leadership and mind power. And we all come from a place where we used to have legacy or heritage applications, and we converted them into more modern cloud native apps. This entire portfolio of VMware, once it acquired Pivotal, is now called Tanzu. And VMware Tanzu is what drives cloud native development, app modernization, and DevSecOps transformation for a lot of organizations. And so as a Tanzu executive advisor or a Tanzu value advisor, what we do is we pair with the C-suite of other companies who are going on a transformation. And we work with them on aligning their strategies or the strategic imperatives that they want to accomplish with a very bespoke path or journey of transformation that would make them more not only successful in the transformation, but also sustainable. And it's at the fundamental core of it is technology, right? You need to have that substrate of technology to drive or accelerate your transformation. But what I focus on a lot is around the culture, the people, and the process, because unless culture and people align in a much more optimal process, it's very difficult to transform. And so what I do is I work with them. We come up with initiatives and strategies that will help drive a much more generative culture, a much more optimal process, more DevOps and lean and agile rather than very sequential or waterfall. Try to remove that manual toil and have the company focus on what really matters for them, the high value activities, and allow all the other activities to be done by systems or by different technologies. And that's kind of what we do. We try to solve all the complex problems, share our failures. That's something I love to do because if I have failed, I've gotten validated learning. I can share it with the world and other people don't have to fail the same way. So I'm very comfortable sharing my failures and I have a lot of them.
Yeah, and my take on failures is not necessarily the failure. It's you just got an opportunity to learn and become better. So that's, that resonates. And it sounds like the current role, you wear multiple hats, almost in the version of a management consultant to a strategist, to an advisor and a mentor and coach, all combined into one role, which is very exciting. When we talk about the different trends or insights, whether that's in your industry or not, share with us, what are you most passionate about these days? What are you researching? What are you perhaps looking to invest further? Share with us any trends that look very interesting to you.
The biggest trend that I've seen over the last year is the change in customer experience and behavior, right? Suddenly, because of this pandemic, the stress and anxiety level of humans around the world have completely increased so much that people they've started to fear their physiological and psychological needs, and they're unable to get them supplemented through either interaction, through their loved ones, or having that normalcy that they used to have before, and they've lost it. So what I'm really excited about is the way in which we are collectively across multiple verticals, we are trying to create a remote contactless world in a digital way. And what we're trying to do is bring that digital twin of those physical interactions that we used to have. And that's exciting. That's really exciting because it's elevating the way in which we interact. Things that we thought were important to us, suddenly we're reevaluating them and say, hey, these are things that automation can do or systems can do. I don't need to do this. I need to focus on what helps me reduce my stress and anxiety level, what helps me collaborate better with people. How can I interact with someone across the world seamlessly without any problem? I mean, look at us. We're on two different coasts and we're interacting. We're having a wonderful conversations. These kinds of things would have taken a lot of orchestration. There would have been flights, hotels, and bookings, probably a really wonderful dinner, which I still miss. I mean, those kinds of things. But fundamentally, we are stepping above and elevating ourselves and changing the way in which we work and the way that we operate. And I think that's super exciting for me in multiple ways. It's not just professionally, but also personally, the way we interact is very different. Our priorities have shifted, and that's one of the optimistic views that I can look at a pandemic. It's really made us reflect and introspect.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I couldn't agree more with you, especially coming out of pandemic with a lot of, you know, just companies shifting to different dynamics of how they collaborate, how they interact. And it's going to be interesting to even, you know, observe and see what transpires in the next period. And a lot of really cool companies actually being born out of this particular necessity, yeah. A lot of different solutions. And which leads me to the further point, the point on innovation, the need to continuously innovate to make things better. What are some of the strategies that really help you, your teams, your organization to stay innovative, to build and foster that culture of innovation?
I think, especially because we're working remotely for long hours, at the core tenet of everything that we do has to be empathy. So I have two primary beliefs. My first belief is that happy people are productive people. And so everything that I do, I try to make sure that my people are happy. Because once they're happy, they have trust, they have collaboration, they have team spirit, they feel much more psychologically safe. And when they're psychologically safe, they can take more risks. They are not afraid to fail. And so they can innovate, right? So that is one of my primary tenets. And so empathy is the core of anything that a leader should be doing when they try to create that generative environment or a psychologically safe environment for people to innovate. The second thing I would say is clearly know why you want to innovate. Like, what is the purpose? What is the value that your company or your organization is generating to the world? And that why is really important. The purpose is really important. And when you can clearly articulate it to your teams, what I really encourage and urge leaders to do is say, then take a step back and don't second guess how they are going to accomplish the why. Empower them and enable them and support them. There might be many ways to get to the same outcome. Your way may not be the only way, and it might be uncomfortable or it might be scary for you if you don't understand the path in which some people will take to reach the destination. But as long as it meet that outcome and you have the key result, it doesn't matter how you went there. As long as you have a lean approach to doing it, you have fast feedback loops and you're learning along the way. So empowerment and enablement, I believe, is also really important. The third one is encourage collaboration. There are a lot of organizations that unfortunately still operate in a very siloed way. And so shifting from a project mindset to a product mindset will actually make cross-functional teams much more powerful. And there's a fantastic book by my friend Mick Kirsten, Project to Product, which talks about it. And that shift, that mental shift from, oh, I have to complete a project and it has deadlines, to it's a product and it has roadmaps and I will continuously deliver value. That is liberating for an organization. So that also drives innovation. It helps deliver features to the market quickly. So that's a huge win. So those are some of the important things that I would say leaders need to focus on, John.
Yeah, those are great strategies. And when we talk about the collaboration aspect and communication within the organization or even outside of that, obviously everything has changed in the past year and moving forward. I talk to a lot of executives at different companies all the time, and everyone has their own take on how they're designing their organizations. obviously, you know, no one has the crystal ball, but it's good to hear different perspectives, how companies approach the design of their structure or their organizations these days. What's your take on designing kind of, or just in general, future of work? What's your view into that? How do you think the company is going to collaborate, communicate, and things like that?
So here's my two cents, and I could be blatantly wrong depending upon how the world shifts, or maybe we're on to something out here. I believe remote work is going to be here to stay. People have had a taste of it. They've enjoyed it. They know what it is. And they feel much more comfortable. There's a lot of benefits, not just physical and health related, right? You feel much more relaxed. You're in a home environment. You don't have to travel. You don't have rush hour traffic. You know, being in the Bay Area, that's a huge thing for me. If I have to go to San Francisco, it probably takes me 1.5 hours by car if I have to drive from San Jose. And I would love to avoid that. Air travel reduces, carbon footprint reduces. So there's a huge amount of win over there from a people perspective. From a company perspective as well, you save a lot of money when people are working, and that is a hard truth. And so I think we are going to downsize the real estate footprint of a lot of organizations. We're going to provide more flexible ways for people to work, rather than focus on timesheets. We are going to focus more on business outcomes and what was delivered at the end of the day. I think that's an exciting thing. The way that we collaborate obviously is going to change. More asynchronous communication is going to be more imperative. One of the things though, which has been a bane for all of us, is the number of video conferencing meetings has become tremendously painful. I think when we lost that security of a physical space, we swung the pendulum the other way and overcompensated in communicating by having too many meetings. I think that is something that we need to address. And I actually, all these things are being collected, and I'm putting out a book. It's coming out late summer. It's called Leading with Empathy, that contains a lot of these things on meeting overload and why it is killing us, how people are overworked, and you know, Zoom fatigue is real, right? So all those various things, I think we need to address those, reduce the amount of meeting overload that we have. But at the end of the day, we are going to uplift and elevate the way that we work together. Our collaboration is going to increase. Geography is not going to prevent us from innovating and collaborating. That's a beautiful thing. The way we do agility, both enterprise and team agility, is going to change, because agile was usually co-located, right? And now we're learning how to be agile without being in the same room. We are virtually co-located, but we can be co-located anywhere. And so that's wonderful. There are a lot of things. I'm really excited to see how the next few months shape out. It's going to be a very exciting time for us.
Yeah, I can relate. And everyone is super excited and nervous at the same time, but also a lot of uncertainty too. But there's a lot of data, a lot of, you know, historical information that we have, how companies have adapted in times like this. So that's definitely exciting. You've mentioned your book, Leading with Empathy. Tell us a little bit about, you know, motivation behind that. What had really had driven you to write on something like this, on that particular topic?
Yeah. So my mother was extremely empathic, and this book, it's been rattling in my head for a while, and I wanted to make this, a fitting tribute to her. She passed from cancer in 2009, and she was always extremely empathic. She taught us to be empathic, and she said that if you're not, one of the things that she said was, if you are not making a difference in this world to someone, then what is the point of living? And that always stuck to me. And so trying to improve the human quality of life has been something for me always. And ever since I entered management, and I had the opportunity to lead multiple teams and help them transform, empathy has been at the core of things. I want to, like I said, happy people are productive people for me. But at the same time, it's not just, you know, willy-nilly saying, just saying the words that, yes, please be empathic. I understand what you feel or what you're going through and all that. It's truly having that emotional connection. And also trying to bring in innovative methods and techniques and processes to help reduce the stress and anxiety within the workforce. Because, you know, strategic disruption is what leads to progress. It's not disruption for the sake of disruption. And so that over the last year, I've been working with so many organizations in verticals that have been hit really hard, like hospitality and travel and retail and healthcare, and seeing the suffering and the pain and people being heroes and stepping up and leading with so much of empathy in this world has been heartwarming. And so that really drove me to write about empathy, how anyone can be a leader, because you don't need to have a title or a role to be a leader. Your actions and how you interact with people with empathy is actually what makes you a leader. So talking about that, and then talking about how enterprises need to have empathy and understand the stress and anxiety that their workforce is going through. And then customer empathy and employee empathy. And so there were so many of these things going on. And I decided it's probably a good time to put all these things together, share some of the techniques that have really worked with us, how to crowdsource empathy, how to hire for empathy, how to reduce the stress level, all those various things. And so, yeah, it ended up being a book, and I'm really happy that Wiley has graciously accepted to publish it. So it comes out late summer.
Well, that's super exciting. And we definitely going to include, you know, any information in the episode notes about the pre-orders or anything like this. Would love to get my hands on that, because I know how much work that is, having just finished, you know, publishing my own book with my co-author on project and product management. It's, you know, it's not easy. It's a full-time job and it's a lot of work. So kudos to you for getting that done. You've mentioned something around when we talk about, you know, leading with empathy, and it all boils down to also a question around talent. As a leader, you, I'm sure, 24/7 think about the type of people you want to surround yourself with, whether you're actively recruiting or not. It's at the top of your mind. How to build a high performing team of like-minded folks that are A players. Share with us your thoughts on talent acquisition and, you know, just in general retention aspect of that, because as we deal with the current state of the market, it is very hot. There's so many opportunities, and companies have now abilities to hire in any parts of the globe, but it also increases the competition between the companies competing for unique talent. And retention becomes a very unique, you know, challenging aspect. Share with us your thoughts on that.
Yeah, definitely, John. And I agree, the market is really hot. I mean, every company needs to transform. So they need people right now, right? And so it's up to us as leaders to really figure out how to make our culture and our organization the right place for nurturing top talent. There's this great book by Daniel Pink called Drive. And if you have not read it, I would recommend you read it. He talks about three things: autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And those are the three things that actually drive a person. Mastery, you can detect by having all these technical interviews and skills and all those various things. That's easy to find. Autonomy is something that you as a leader will have to provide. And that's where I say that once you know the why of your organization, don't second guess the how, because you need to give them that empowerment to do it. And then the why is the purpose, right? Why do you want people to be there? For me, the way I think about the kind of people that I want to hire, empathy is really important. I mean, that's a common theme for me, but it's not just empathy, you know, emotional empathy. It's more compassionate empathy, which is, you're able to relate to the person, but you make practical actions to improve upon that. And that's what I really dig in and find out. So My interviews are weird. They're usually like puzzles and problem solving things and what if scenarios and hypotheticals, where I try to assess and find out how the person operates in a crisis, how they respond to an event that has occurred, what kind of decision making that people can make with very little information. Do they constantly keep thinking about the business outcomes that the company has to accomplish, or are they very tactical and operational and try to solve one problem at a time? Is there systemic thinking? How are they bringing Lean, Agile, and DevOps into all of this? Because those three things are not limited to software industries. They are concepts that people have started embracing in their personal lives as well. So those are some things that we want to assess and look at when we are interviewing. With regards to retention, I think the onus lies a lot on us leaders because we have the ability or I want to say the fortune of actually creating a generative environment. So ways in which we can increase reduce retention is by increasing the psychological safety. Keep your say to do ratio as close to one as possible, which means that whatever you say, you are going to do it. And do whatever you say that you promised you would do. Bring that concept, don't be afraid to fail in public. I've failed a number of times, and I think on a daily basis I fail, and that's okay. But acknowledging that failure and telling and accepting it in public signals to the entire organization that, you know, it's okay to fail. And it's as long as you learn from it, you don't repeat it again, and it's not to and it's not a consistent pattern, it's okay, because unless you fail, you won't learn. Providing that safety is something really important. And then, you know, allowing people to be innovative in every way possible. There are so many initiatives that you can do just to keep them engaged. Slow down the deadlines and deliverables because, you know, people are not working from home. This is something that I talk about a lot. We have life going on around us, and it's not just us working in the home. You have our loved ones and significant others who are also working, our children who are having virtual school in many places still, right? Our pets need attention, and they're suddenly wondering. I mean, like, okay, so he's at home, but he's not spending time with me. What's up with that? So all those various things put together makes it not work from home, but what I call as existence from home. So acknowledging that and slowing things down will really help retain people, keep a sustainable pace. That's what I would say for retaining. And then people become happy. And when they're happy, you have a generative culture and you have a lot of innovation and you build those legends and stories and, you know, all those awesome things that people hear about. It becomes, you know, viral, and they want to come and stay with you and be part of that culture. So, yeah, that's really powerful.
Right, right. Absolutely. No, that's, you know, that resonates on so many levels. And you've mentioned something about interviewing when you talk to potential candidates. And I see a lot of different ways that companies take on this particular very important aspect of attracting the right candidates to their organizations, and viewing that as almost as a branding exercise as well, where it starts at the interview level. It's not when you actually hire an employee. It's, you know, in the very initial conversations.
Exactly.
Share with us your thoughts on effective interviewing. What are some of the things that are maybe working for you or maybe not? Curious to get your take on that.
So the first thing that I would say is whenever I go into an interview or whenever I talk to people and we discuss about interviewing techniques, I say that there are two interviews that are going on at any time. You are interviewing the candidate and the candidate is interviewing you as well. You're being assessed and judged at the same time. So you want to come off as a brand ambassador for the company and for the culture. And it's not, it's, it's, in many cases, the power dynamic is not what you think it is. The candidate has much more power because their voice will be heard by so many others. So you want to really encourage candor and a much more dialogue and friendly conversation in an interview rather than having a very cliche things like, what are your top two strengths? So what do you consider as your two weaknesses? Nobody's going to give you a really correct answer when you ask for the top two weaknesses. They're going to give you something that is masked as a strength in some particular way. And there are so many books that have written about it as well. Just get to the core of why you want this person within the organization. Identify what their core skills are. And it doesn't have to be just the technical skills. People can pick up technologies. Are they able to pick it up? Do they have that propensity or and that love for learning? Are they innovative? How creative are they when they are thinking of breaking down a puzzle or a solution? How are they trying to solve a human problem? That is the most important thing, because at the end of the day, as an organization, everything that you do, the value that you provide, is to improve customer delight. So if you're not thinking about the customer and you're just thinking about processes or artifacts or products, you're doing it wrong. And so taking that shift and asking and interviewing and having fun during the interview, talking about different perspectives, is what I really encourage people to do. And personally for me, in an interview, after an interview is over, if I've not learned something from a candidate, I feel that I didn't do my job interviewing. And that's something really powerful for me.
Right, absolutely. Because at the end of the day, it's a two-way street. It's a two-way conversation. It's not necessarily only you having that opportunity to interview and ask the questions for the candidate, but also for them to understand what type of culture, what type of personalities, what type of leadership. And it's very difficult to do that through one short conversation. Yeah. It's something that has to be an ongoing dialogue. So I love your take on kind of treating that as, you know, as an investment, as, you know, you actually taking the opportunity to get to know the candidate.
For sure. And I would add on and say that interviews are stressful situations for the candidates, and some of them might become very, introverted, or they might become reserved when they're trying to converse with you. Some people get thrown off even by titles even today, right? So it might be nerve-wracking for them. But it is up to you to calm them down, make them feel a little more regular, comfortable. And if they are not able to ask any questions, or if they say, I don't have any questions, take it upon yourself to explain your culture, what drives the organization, what kind of cool initiatives are available. Because you being a brand ambassador means you also have to market your organization a bit. Some people may not do well. As it is now, a lot of the interviews are through video conferencing, and they might feel conscious. They might not want to talk. So that's an additional facet of video interviews that I think people need to take note of.
Right. Absolutely. I love that take on kind of the overall concept of the interview. And when it comes to, you know, specific strategies to attract the right talent to your teams, to your organization, obviously VMware has a brand, has a reputation, but what are some of the other things or maybe recommendations you have for others, maybe smaller companies or that don't necessarily have that type of brand or recognition to attract the type of talent that they want to their teams?
That's a great question. And there are so many ways to answer that. Let me see if I can rattle off a few. First one is embrace your social media. Social media is super powerful. Everyone's on it. Don't limit yourself to just LinkedIn. I know LinkedIn is a lot for professionals and there are professional forums and all that, but consider the demographic that you're trying to attract as well. And then try to use the social media that is, you know, popular with them. So share your stories. How will people know about your brand and all the cool things that you're doing unless you share the stories and share it in a storytelling way? So embrace Instagram and Twitter and share all these various things. Talk, share pictures. As a team lead and all, you can take pictures of your team building events and share it and talk about all the wonderful things that you've done. Get the story out there, because it's not just limited to news articles, press releases, or blog posts anymore. It is about how much you can capture what happens within your organization, so a life of a day within an organization, out in social media. And that's really important if you're establishing your brand. Have webinars, have conversations, host an event. Video hosting is super easy. Even if you're, you know, on the free version of Zoom as a startup company, you get 40 minutes. And 40 minutes is a long time for an event. You can just have some event, talk about something that is really current. Kubernetes is one of the really, really important topics. Everyone thinks that Kubernetes is the solution to everything right now. And so talk about your take on it. Have some other people come and join you and help have that conversation. There are so many ways that you can use social media to help you and get your thoughts across. That is something that you can do. The other thing that I would say, and especially because of the pandemic and all the adversity that's going on, do something communal. Help the community. Go beyond what your organization does. See, really take a step back and think of the mission, what you're trying to do. And if it is in a technology space, just remove the phrase of technology from the mission and see what other area or vertical that you can help in. That is something very powerful as well. It gives a purpose for the people within your organization, and it also uplifts humanity. It helps so many people, and others will realize that you really mean what you're saying in your mission, and it's not limited to just P&L or profit or EBITDA or any of these other things. It is truly about making a mark on society. And that's something that's really powerful and goes a long way.
Yeah, those are great thoughts on that particular topic. And it's, you know, I'm sure we can spend the rest of the, you know, the episode talking about this. So I appreciate your ability to consolidate that very loaded question into a very concise manner. Gautam, in terms of your personal self-actualization and learning, share with us, what are your sources for reading, for learning on a daily basis?
The standard news feeds, Forrester Gartner, CIO, TechCrunch, Verge, all those various things. GigaOM is another one that's really cool. So that's where I get all the technology feeds and all those other things. There are a bunch of other feeds that I do and I subscribe from a humanistic perspective. I'm an ambassador for DevOps Institute. So DevOps Institute promotes the humans of DevOps aspect of things. So we have feeds over there and we help promote the human element of DevOps. So that's another feed that we have. There are several feeds on empathic leadership. I'm a big proponent of that. So I consume those as well. Reddit is a good one. Twitter feeds, Reddit's really interesting. It keeps you on the pulse of things, and it can be weird at times, but at the end of the day, if you really think about it, you are trying to understand how communities operate at such a diverse level. I mean, it's a huge phenomenon. So I do go in and check my Reddit feeds once in a while. So that's there. I try not to use a lot of memes. I'm too old for that, but
yeah, it's a little bubble.
Right? Some of them are hilarious and they're fun. And you know, you need laughter. You need to learn different perspectives and viewpoints. So those are things that I do. I am not on Facebook. I actually do not like Facebook or WhatsApp. My master's was in data privacy, and yeah, I can go on and on about it. So.
It's a touchy subject for you, right?
It is. So I'm not on those things, but I am on Twitter and LinkedIn a lot. I spend a lot on LinkedIn as well. LinkedIn has some really good feeds. So those are the ones that I check on a very regular basis.
Yeah, that makes sense. And thanks for sharing. And, you know, I agree. It all boils down to whatever the bubble that you create for yourself, what the type of people that you follow, what are the type of people you add to your connections. You're in full control. I hear a lot of people saying, oh, it's all politics and it's all this and it's too much entertainment. But at the end of the day, you control the narrative. You control who you surround yourself with. And that applies to the real life as well, right?
Exactly. I mean, it is a choice. And technology is usually not good or bad. Technology only accelerates you to the outcome that you want it to get you to. So you can use technology to go to a positive outcome, or you can use it to go negative. It's up to you. Yes, there are some algorithms which probably will force you down a particular path, but you can quickly readjust those and get them out of your life. It is a choice. We have much more control than we think we do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, that's great. And in conclusion, do you have a favorite book besides yours that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Yeah, so I have a couple. So the first book I would say for leaders is Start With Why by Simon Sinek. That is a wonderful book, and it was extremely eye-opening for me when I read it, because it fundamentally changes the way that you think. If you're a leader who's trying to transform, then I would definitely recommend The Phoenix Project by Jin Kim and Co. When I read it, and this was a long time ago, before we were starting to transform, I read the book, and I could relate to a lot of the things that were happening in that book. And then I made it as mandatory reading for my entire teams before we embarked on that journey. So that I would highly recommend. There's a follow-up book called The Unicorn Project that's equally funny as well. So those are two if you are trying to go down a transformational path. And you know, there are other things. It's you need to have a 360 view of the world. So trying to understand all the various problems around diversity, inclusion, and equity is important. And there are so many books on those that you might want to, you want to broaden your horizons, especially in this remote working environment. So those are some things that I would say.
Those are great recommendations. I'm familiar with a couple of them, definitely. And we'll make those available in episode notes. Gotham, thank you so much for your time today. Personally learned quite a bit. We're going to stay in touch. Can't wait for your book launch, and really appreciate your insights today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, John.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.